I know it's a righteously hot day, isn't it? You're worried about getting your brains baked. I am too. But the sun is not our enemy. It is our father. Just like the earth is not our enemy, but our mother. When that sun rises, our mother and father embrace, and out of their union comes everything we live in, everything we wear, everything we eat. What more do we need than that? So we honor that. The mother, the father, and the living spirit of all things. So let that sun beat down on you, and don't push it back, don't resent it, don't complain about it. You soak up that sun like a big battery, and come winter, you ooze that energy out a little bit at a time, and you will stay warm. I sing you Woody Guthrie's last song. Woody was on his way to the hospital. It's time of the Korean War, which was mine, my war. And so by all odds, his last song. I made up some newer words to it, some of them, just to bring it down into our time, because I figured that Woody wouldn't mind. Why do your warships sail on my waters? Why do your death bombs fall from my sky? Why do you burn my town and my farm down? I've got to know, yes, I've got to know why. Why do your ships haul death to my people? Nitro blockbusters, big cannons and guns. Why can't your ships haul some food and some clothing? I've got to know, yes, I've got to know. I've got to know, yes, I've got to know, friend. Hungry lips ask me wherever I go. Comrades and friends all falling around me. I've got to know, yes, I've got to know. What good work did you do? I'd like to ask you to give you the money right out of my hand. I built your big house to hide from my people. Why do you hide so? I've got to know. And why can't we spend more to build homeless shelters? Why are the homeless here anyhow? Fortunes are building on war and on killing. I've got to know, yes, I've got to know now. I've got to know, yes, I've got to know, friend. Hungry lips ask me wherever I go. Comrades and friends all falling around me. I've got to know, yes, I've got to know. You locked me in jail, you put me in prison. The hospital's jammed and your crazy house full. Why did your cop hurt my unarmed peace worker? I've got to know, yes, I've got to know. Now my friends are dying from AIDS and from cancer. Your big money goes where the death missiles fly. Built by good workers and paid by war taxes. I've got to know, yes, I've got to know why. I've got to know, yes, I've got to know, friend. Hungry lips ask me wherever I go. Comrades and friends all falling around me. I've got to know, yes, I've got to know why.
Well, this here is, of course, Augusto Cesar Sandino II with Santa Cruz, Free Radio Santa Cruz, and I have the absolute honor to be speaking with...
You Utah Phillips, a.k.a. the golden voice of the Great Southwest. Take it or leave it.
We'll take it. You just gave a wonderful short talk and you sang a song. Maybe you could just start by talking about what that song means to you. I want to know.
Well, yeah, it's... We are, if I was to characterize the age we're in right now in the United States, it's the age of the failure of analysis. And I mean, a really in-depth analysis. We think we know, but we really don't know. We're not digging deep enough, and that means we have to reacquire the capacity to ask questions instead of just laying down our rap. Ask questions. I've got to know. I'll give you an example of that. I do a cardiac, I have congestive heart failure, so I do a cardiac rehab exercise class 3 days a week at the hospital early in the morning. Well, in my cardiac class is an arch-conservative former county supervisor. I mean, a black helicopter guy. There's the most rapacious logger in the county. There's the head of CAB Pro, you know, the Pro Development Business Association, their executive director. Well, now, I could wear inflammatory T-shirts in there. I could go in there. Hell, you know, I'm in there to reduce stress. So we arrived at agreements among ourselves that we wouldn't talk about politics or religion or anything like that, which means that I've gotten to know them as human beings. And I find out they're quite different people than what the normal liberal to radical community thinks they are, you know. Like the logger, the guy who owns the big, big lumber company, has floated a lot of guys on his books when there wasn't any work just to make sure that they or their families got by. Well, I need to know that. And the only way I'm going to find out these things is to ask questions. Keep asking questions. I remember old Ammon Hennessy, one of my great teachers, a Catholic worker, who took me off of the freight trains and, you know, got me, showed me why I needed to be an anarchist and a pacifist, which I am. I really understand what they mean. But Ammon, I saw Ammon, people, he'd be picketing against war taxes, and he was in his 70s, out in front of the federal building in Salt Lake. And people would come and hang him up, you know, for hours, yell and rant and hate him. And he would take them aside one at a time, maybe go have sit under the bush and have water and ask them questions. Instead of laying down his rap about taxes, about war, you know, rap, 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 you know, did you know that, did you know that? He'd say, you from right here, Alan? What do you do for a living, you know? How do you like your job? You know, and just keep asking questions. Well, here you're talking to somebody who, that work-a-day guy, who puts in the time, and the only questions he ever gets asked is, why are you late, and how soon can you get it done? And he can be sitting on a couch married 40 years to the same woman, looking at the same newscast, and they never turn to each other and say, what do you really think of that? So there's millions of people walking around with these thoughts, feelings, ideas, impressions, deep opinions, and nobody's ever asked. So suddenly, here's Hennessy asking, you know, digging deeper and deeper. He always asks the next question. One question leads to another. And once they overcome their suspicion of what does this guy want and realize you're really interested in what they have to say, they begin to unload. You know, it's like a dam breaking and it all comes out. And then Ammon just keeps it going by asking questions. And finally he says, when they're all emptied out, it leaves room for me to put something back in there that makes more sense. So, you know, I say to people who just want to get in somebody's face and tell them all the facts and figures, you know, say, lay back and ask questions, you know. Earn your right. Earn your way into that person's brain. Earn your way into that brain.
Don't force it.
And practice it, too. It's a real good idea for people to get together and do a workshop on asking questions, on how to approach. Okay, let's say, first of all, let's commit ourselves to talking to two people every day who don't agree with us. And how the hell are we going to change this thing? All right, let's have a workshop to begin with that, and I'll tell you how to frame the question at the workshop where people get together and discuss this. And I really mean this. I want you to get together and discuss this. I'll posit you a box. That box has a MOBA strip tape in it. You know how it repeats endlessly over and over again? There's nothing on that tape that the programmer didn't put there. That box has horns coming out the side, so it picks up audio sensors. It has photoelectric cells on the front that pick up video, you know, eyes. And it has two lights on top, a red one and a green one. As it picks up data from the outside through the photoelectric cells and the horns, it matches that data to the MOBA strip tape. And if it doesn't match, the red light goes on. And if it does match, the green light goes on. Okay? That's what we're up against. All right? How do you put questions in such a way that neither light goes on, or both lights go on, or they alternate back and forth, which is contradiction.
Right.
You know, how do you make questions that way? Now, isn't that a great, great question? Isn't that a great idea to think about? You know, how to foil that programming? And you do that rhetorically, you know, through rhetorical skills that need to be practiced and need to be done in coach and pupil, in what do they call it? Like a living theater. where you square off with each other in a room and you try to practice doing that with each other. One person takes this role, the other takes the other role. I think if we don't start doing things like that, we're going to continue to wind up talking to ourselves. We got this problem where we have been huge demonstrations. We've developed a whole lot of our own media. You go to a bookstore and you see tables covered with books that are bush bashing, you know, from Molly Ivins to Garrison Keillor, for heaven's sakes, to everybody, a whole table full. I've never seen that in my life. And we're still not making a lot of headway. You know, it's still neck and neck.
How would you feel about the media's role in that?
About the what?
The media's role, the, you know, television, papers.
Well, we've been betrayed by mass media. We've simply been, frankly, betrayed. They haven't asked any of the right questions. You know, they've been intimidated. Well, you know, when you got a boss, you can't laugh off that curse. And so no matter how objective a reporter says he is, he's got to go back and give what he writes to an editor. And he may be a person of good conscience and a person of deep feelings who just feels frustrated as hell. But he's got to pay his mortgage. He's got to feed his kids. And so he's going to watch that, what he brings back, the truth of what he brings back, kind of whittled down by the editor, who also has somebody on his back. You know, bossism. Bossism is right up there with racism and sexism. It's the one ism we don't talk about. Okay, but bossism is just as lethal as racism and sexism. And you know some? They all three come from the same place in the mind, the possession of people and things.
Oh, yeah.
We don't deal with our own acts of possession, people and things, we're not going to be able to defeat racism, bossism, and sexism.
Just to clarify, what does bossism mean to you? I mean, how would you define it for those that don't understand?
If you were to have a workshop on this and put up a piece of butcher paper and get a bunch of employees in there from various job sites and say, okay, now we're going to define bossism, and you start making a list, and everybody would have their own list, you know, but there were things on there like arbitrariness, capriciousness, sudden anger, no grievance procedure, you know, authoritarianism without any purpose. What we want to do is to create voluntary combinations among ourselves to serve our needs as we define them and not as they're defined for us. We have, in an anarchist model, you have the expert role, okay? The expert role. This is another good exercise here. The expert role, say you're going to hire a new librarian. Okay, and everybody that's working in that library, they have a chance to interview that prospective librarian. And each one of them acknowledges that person knows more about library science than you do. And everybody acknowledges that. So they assign that authority, that expert role, to that person. Remember, authority is something you assign. Otherwise, it's just arbitrary. It doesn't mean anything unless it holds a gun, and then that's different. You know, that's force. So authority is something that you assign. It's not something that just shows up, you know, which is what happens in bossism. Okay. Authority just shows up. You didn't assign it. You just got to kind of live with it. So you assign authority. So this is the expert role in this situation. That person who gets that role has the option of accepting that expert role or accepting the boss role or accepting both. The expert role along with the boss role, okay? So once you've established this model where you're going to assign the authority, you create a mechanism where if that person you've assigned authority to lapses into the boss role, you have a way to respond to it. Like, yes, the boss. And that means right then that transaction stops and you analyze what happened there and then you go on. See, so you have a escape valve there. That's another good exercise to get into. This is fun.
No, this is good.
So, next.
Well,
I hate to butt in, but, we're from Santa Cruz, you know, and there's this big anarchy scene there, and it's more of a lifestyle for a lot of kids there, and, they call themselves anarchists, and they have this, like, vehement, like, opposition to authority, and it ends up that then anytime they ever try to organize, it just falls apart, because anytime anyone in their group starts to take on authority, even if it's an authority that person deserves, because they're like an author of an idea, authority on, like, they're perceived as not like getting it. So like to hear the idea of authority Something you assign to people. That's great.
Given this idea that I just told you, you know, that they get together and when they get together, just to be together, learn how to assign authority.
Yeah.
Understand what that expert role is, that there is somebody that knows better than you.
Yeah.
And so give them their head, you know, say, grant that to them, you know. And also get rid of the anger, get rid of the nihilism, which is very often confused with anarchy, you know.
So bossism is also like when someone doesn't deserve that authority,
oh, yeah.
but they push it over you because...
Oh, hell yeah, like old Hansen on the docks in the 1930s down there, the old longshoreman that I mentioned earlier when I was on the stage. He said that, you know, he was in a warehouse with a crew of about 25, and the boss brought in a new foreman, who was his nephew, wanted to give the kid a job. But the kid didn't know the work because it meant he was dangerous, and he was arrogant. So they went out in the parking lot and had their own election, elected one of their own members as the new foreman. And Hansen went to the kid and said, well, you can tell us what to do, but we're going to check it with Jake first. And the kid couldn't go to the boss because the boss said, well, if you can't handle it, kid, I'll send you someplace else. So they worked for 2 years with their own foreman.
Oh,
on
wow.
that job. You know, anybody can do that. You don't even need a union to do that. That's what I mean, assigning authority appropriately. Also, the anti-authoritarian, you got to become the authority. Anarchy, anarchos, without government. And I'd like to modify that, change that a little bit, say self-government. You have to become your own best government. Because if you can do that, you can do it better and cheaper than they can. Okay, you have to become a self-governing person. You got to learn how to do the right thing in your life. You know, we grow up in an environment of cultural compulsion. Most of the social forms are imposed upon us. We inherit them. We're not the architects of those forms. We inherit them. They're imposed on us when we're little kids.
We grow up into them.
Yeah, we grow up into them. And some very often without questioning them. And they're mainly coercive forms. Boss, employee, teacher, pupil, parent, kid. Marital combinations. You know, we're embedded in all these coercive combinations. All we want to do as anarchists is to create voluntary combinations between ourselves. Voluntary combinations. Which articulate our needs as we determine them instead of the way they're determined for us, you know, from the outside. And an anarchist is somebody who always changes, is always willing to change, have the courage to change, and to admit it when you're wrong, and then you do change, so you're constantly growing into becoming an anarchist, you understand? Put it as simple as I can. Now, young folks, listen to me. If you and I can agree to do our share of the work of our world, whatever world we're in the block, in the town, if you and I can agree to do our share of the work of the world, if you and I can agree to take only what we need and put back what we can, if you and I can agree to care for the afflicted, and if you and I can agree not to hurt anybody, all the things you can't get from the boss and you can't get from the state, then you and I can begin to build that little way, that voluntary combination, and just begin to get the work of the world done without the boss and without the state. Okay? Now, you're going to have to take a bunch of dumb jobs to get there. Everybody's born with their own work. Everybody's born with their own virtue, the way the Taoists put it, you know. What is it that animates you? What is it that satisfies your soul? What brings peace to your soul? What is it that awakens your creative spirit? It's uniquely you, your work, see, not somebody else's. Work is something you do for yourself. Toil is what you do for somebody else. Okay, find your work, you know, search in your heart and your soul, through your hands, through your mind. What is your work? Now, you're going to have to take a bunch of dumb jobs with bosses, but you're going to take part of the money and part of the time, and you're going to put it to work acquiring the skills and the tools to do your work. And then one day, you're going to call in well, and then you're going to go do your work. Now, if it's something you find you can't do alone, you're going to find other like-minded people who want to form that voluntary combination, and you'll do it together, and you'll get through the world. All right? That's what an anarchist is to me.
Huh. Call in well.
Just kind of on the topic, I've had a lot of discussions, and I feel like why it's not certainly anything, any solution in and of itself, that part of whatever solution we do have to search for is, unfortunately, voting. I just kind of wanted to get your take on that, because I've had a lot of conversations with anarchists about that.
Yeah, run that by me again.
Just in terms of, I don't think it's a solution of itself. I'm never going to trust any candidate to deliver us to freedom or to liberty or prosperity or anything like that. Like you said, it's something we have to do for ourselves. But it's a necessary evil to vote, in my opinion.
This isn't going to change from the top down. Nothing is coming our way from the state or from the boss. We have to erode from the bottom up. We have to create systems that are in our possession. We have to create a technology that's in our hands in terms of food, clothing, heat, fuel, which we can do. We need a technology that's so small, that's so decentralized, that we may not be able to break the back of the big corporations, but we can sure as hell learn how to stay out of their way. You know, I've lived in the cracks all of my life. As far as voting is concerned, yeah, we're faced with a corporate fascist takeover of the country. They've already corporatized the executive branch of the government. We are in the Weimar Republic, you know, which preceded the rise of Hitler. We're in the Weimar, and I can feel it. Anarchists generally, well, the way Ammon taught me, Ammon never went to the polls. His body was his ballot. And he cast that body ballot in behalf of the people around him every day of his life. He voted all the time. You couldn't tell him he hadn't voted. He said, I didn't assign responsibility to other people to do things. I accepted responsibility and saw to it that something got done. In this situation, I'm going to have to put that on the shelf.
Fair enough.
But I will tell you this. I won't vote for Kerry. I won't vote for Bush. I won't vote for Nader. Right now, there's a little girl named Reza in Isfahan in Iran, whose father's in the army. There's a shopkeeper whose whole life is tied up in Damascus in a little shop that he has because he's supporting a family, including his grandparents. When the bombs start to fall, Ahmed is going to lose everything in Damascus. Reza is going to lose her father in Iran. There are millions of people that are affected by this election around the world who are going to be the victims of this foreign policy, but they can't vote in this election. So they need surrogates. They need people to vote for them. So I'm voting for Reza, and I'm voting for Ahmed. Okay?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Maybe we could switch topic over to what we're doing here today. We're with the Tri-Valley Cares, California Peace Action, and several other groups have put together this Books Not Bombs in front of the Lawrence Livermore Nuclear Laboratories, where ongoing research is creating new and quote-unquote more usable nuclear weapons. Maybe we could just kind of talk about today a little bit and why you felt it was important to come out.
I came out to show solidarity for Tri-Valley Cares for one thing. We also came out because we're really organizing very, very strongly in Nevada County here, which is a conservative rural county. We brought 40 people down here in a bus, which is pretty, you know, for a town our size. We're doing well. Whatever comes along that needs organizing around, the backbone that we're building is locally. You know, the reason we need to organize and needed to be able to pull together organized to come down here is so that we feel more motivated when we go back home to get into the public school with selective service information, you see, to get into the local media, right? So we're here, of course, to support this effort because none of us wants to see that second generation of nuclear weapons built. But we're here to become self-organized so we go back home more highly motivated to really dig in where we live and work. If we can't change it where we live and work, where the hell are we supposed to change it? You understand? Also, you know, I grew up during the Cold War. Well, hell, I was 10 years old when the Hiroshima was bombed. I was living in Dayton, Ohio, you know, in an Army Air Corps base. My father's in the Army Air Corps. We thought it was a great victory, you know, when we were kids. We paraded through the streets, beating garbage can lids, had a big parade all through Dayton there. The Cold War, the hydrogen bomb, blew a hole in the atmosphere with Operation Bravo in the South Pacific, scared the hell out of the scientists when they started underground testing. They knew they had the tiger by the tail. But nobody raised a ruckus. Very few people raised a ruckus about that. Well, the Cold War is supposed to be over. We want that peace dividend, and again, we're going to have to raise one whale of a ruckus, and that's what we're here to do. And we'll say, you're not going to do this to us again, you know, this the tyranny of fear. You're not going to do this to us again.
how would you feel about, in terms of the priorities of this administration? It seems like more and more, you know, the defense budget is one of the largest ever, and, you know, social services are crumbling, you know, clinics, healthcare, everything. I mean,
the priorities. What is the priority of a mega American corporation?
Make money.
The Quarterly Report.
Yeah.
That's the priority of this administration. This is a corporatized administration. So that's their priority. Profit the poor people. We understand that. Well, look, I'm going to get back with my people and undertake to organize it.